Next case is number 08-1790, James E. Searcy against the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Mr. Barney.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, James Barney on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Searcy. There are two alternative arguments set forth in the briefs. One is a plain meaning argument, the other is an ambiguity argument. This morning I'd like to focus primarily on the ambiguity argument because I believe that is Mr. Searcy's strongest argument. The question here is whether 38 U.S.C. Section 1162 precludes the DVA from providing two separate clothing allowances to a veteran such as Mr. Searcy who has amputations of both the upper and lower extremities. If there's any ambiguity on this point, then we submit that the CAVC's interpretation of the statute is erroneous because the CAVC did not give any credence to the Supreme Court's decision in Brown v. Gardner.
Yes, but point us to the ambiguity.
Point the ambiguity out? Is that your question, Your Honor?
The ambiguity, if there's no... I agree. If there's no ambiguity, it's difficult.
Right. So the point here is, if there's any ambiguity, then I believe that there is error in the CAVC's decision because it failed to apply the guidance of Brown v. Gardner. So turning to the statute, 1162, there's two sections, and I'd like to address both of them in turn. The first, paragraph 1, requires the Secretary to pay a clothing allowance to each veteran who, because of a service-connected disability, wears or uses a prosthetic or orthopedic appliance, including a wheelchair, which the Secretary determines tends to wear out or tear the clothing of the veteran. Now, here there is no dispute that Mr. Searcy uses a wheelchair, which is service-connected, and that would separately qualify him under the statute for a clothing allowance. And there's also no dispute that Mr. Searcy has a prosthetic arm, also service-connected, which would separately qualify him for the clothing allowance under the statute. The question is whether there's something in that statute that clearly precludes or prohibits the DVA, which is what the court held, from awarding Mr. Searcy two separate allowances. Now, both the CAVC and the Secretary argue that, yes, there is something that clearly does prohibit the DVA from awarding two allowances, and that is the text, in the sense that the statute says a clothing allowance to each veteran. And the Secretary argues that this clearly means that each veteran can only get one allowance. Well, we disagree. I think I can illustrate this with an analogy. We're all generally familiar with the tax code, and you can imagine a provision of the tax code that provides a tax credit to each taxpayer who purchases a hybrid vehicle during the tax year. Well, what happens if you purchase two hybrid vehicles during the tax year? Do you get one tax credit or you get two tax credits? I would submit that at best, that provision would be ambiguous on that point and highly likely that taxpayers would litigate it. And arguably, if there's nothing in the tax code that specifically limits a taxpayer to only one tax credit, if you purchase two qualifying vehicles, you should be entitled to two tax credits. You can use other analogies, but the point is...
I would have thought you've used the patent analogy and the patent claims, where A does not mean single, but could mean plural. There are cases from this court saying A means more than one at times.
I would accept that as well, Your Honor. Thank you. And the point is, you can come up with lots of analogies, and I think the point is that anytime you have language that ties a benefit to a qualification, there is an inherent ambiguity, because the question is, what happens if you have two qualifications? And that's the situation with this statute. There's an inherent ambiguity. Now, I think the Secretary tacitly has acknowledged that, because the Secretary posits a alternative argument, which is that Mr. Searcy's interpretation of the statute would lead to unworkable results. Specifically, and the CAVC also put this in its opinion, but specifically, the Secretary argues that under Mr. Searcy's interpretation, a veteran with two prostheses on his arms, for instance, two prosthetic arms, would still qualify for two clothing allowances, even though both of those prostheses tend to wear out the same article of clothing. Well, we disagree that that's necessarily going to be the result of this interpretation. The DVA already has a framework in place for distinguishing between what it calls overlapping disabilities and non-overlapping disabilities. And with the court's indulgence, I would like to refer to the decision of the Veterans Court in Esteban v. Brown. Now, I do apologize. This was not cited in the briefs, but I would like to cite it now because I think it's important. This is 6 Vet App 259, page 262, and this is a decision of the Veterans Court in 1994. Now, in Esteban, the veteran had a single service-connected injury to his face, but it resulted in three separate disabilities: disfigurement of his face, painful scars, and muscle injury interfering with his ability to chew or masticate. Each of these disabilities was separately rateable at 10% under the rating schedule, but the RO and the BVA both awarded only a total of 10% to the veteran, and they reasoned that he shouldn't be allowed to stack or pyramid these ratings on top of each other because they all related to the same injury. It went to the CAVC, and the CAVC disagreed and awarded the veteran a total of 30%. And it's the court's reasoning that I think is very important here, so I'd like to go ahead and read it. And again, this is from 6 Vet App, page 262. The critical element is that none of the symptomatology for any one of these three conditions is duplicative of or overlapping with the symptomatology of the other two conditions. Appellant's symptomatology is distinct and separate: disfigurement, painful scars, and facial muscle damage resulting in problems with mastication. Thus, as a matter of law, appellant is entitled to combine his 10% rating for disfigurement with an additional 10% rating for tender and painful scars and a third 10% rating for facial muscle injury interfering with mastication. So that same framework, which is already in place at the DVA, it's been the law since at least 1994, where they distinguish between overlapping and non-overlapping injuries, could be applied here. So a reasonable interpretation of 1162 would be to say that a veteran can receive multiple clothing allowances if he has qualifying disabilities that are distinct and non-overlapping with respect to how they tend to wear and tear the veteran's clothing. So going back to the situation of a veteran with two prosthetic arms, if those prosthetic arms both tend to wear and tear the same article of clothing, a reasonable interpretation would be that those are overlapping injuries that only entitle the veteran to one clothing allowance. But that's not the situation here. Mr. Searsley has what could be called non-overlapping injuries. He uses a wheelchair, which tends to wear and tear pants, and he has a prosthetic arm, which tends to wear and tear shirts. So we disagree with the Secretary and the CAVC that our interpretation would somehow lead to unworkable results below. I want to briefly just turn to paragraph 2 of the statute, which deals with medication that have been prescribed by a physician for service-connected skin condition, which the Secretary has determined causes irreparable damage to the veteran's outer garments.
Would you differentiate then based upon the wear and tear of the particular clothing in various parts? So if you have a pair of pants, then the fact that you're wearing them all the time in a wheelchair, they would wear faster than a shirt that you'd wear or a prosthetic arm. Who's to make that determination? You think that the statute would allow that for regulatory purposes?
The statute allows the Secretary to make that determination, and the statute's clear that the Secretary is the one that determines whether or not a particular prosthetic device tends to wear and tear an article of clothing. In practice, I believe these determinations are made by the VA in a general categories, that wheelchairs in general are determined to wear and tear pants, that prosthetic limbs of the upper body are in general deemed to wear and tear shirts. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
So that would be a different wear and tear type of a location, that you differentiate the two, or that, even three or four for that matter.
That's right, Your Honor.
So for each one, there'd be a separate clothing allowance.
That's right. Under our interpretation of the statute, that would be correct, as long as they're not overlapping. So if you have two prosthetic arms that both wear and tear the same article of clothing, those would be overlapping disabilities. Now, paragraph 2, to be clear, Mr. Searsley is not claiming a clothing allowance under paragraph 2. The only reason I'm discussing it is that the Secretary has pointed to paragraph 2 as an interpretive aid to be able to interpret paragraph 1. Specifically, the government argues that because paragraph 2 appears to allow only one clothing allowance, even for a skin condition that affects both the upper and lower portions of the body, that same paradigm has to be applied to paragraph 1. That is incorrect because paragraph 2 is very clearly, and by design, narrower in scope than paragraph 1. Paragraph 2 only applies if there's irreparable damage to the veteran's outer garments. Paragraph 1, in contrast, does not require irreparable damage. It only requires wear and tear, and it's not limited to outer garments. It actually could include undergarments as well, and that's an issue that's actually been litigated at the CAVC.
Actually, if I understand it, although I think it's dicta in the case, the Secretary seems to be of the view that if you're getting a clothing allowance under 1, you cannot get one under 2. You're only entitled to one or the other.
That's right, Your Honor. That was the, and I agree it is dicta, which is why I hadn't planned on addressing it here.
That strikes me as rather strange in view of the fact that they're quite different problems and they might affect quite different parts of your clothing, but I don't really think that we need to address that issue here. Neither do you, I take it.
I don't think so, Your Honor, but I do agree with your analysis.
Yeah.
But turning to paragraph 2 again, the other difference is paragraph 2 requires a physician's prescription for the medication. Paragraph 1 does not require a prescription for the orthopedic devices or prosthesis. So the point is, if you read the text of the statute, it's clear that paragraph 2 by design is narrower in scope. So it would not be fair or correct to use paragraph 2 to artificially limit the scope of paragraph 1. Next, I'd like to just briefly address the legislative history because I also think it's very important in this case. The 1972 legislative history does not shed any light on the question before the court today. And the reason is the VA, during the 1972 deliberations, put forth two separate and different sets of numbers. One set of numbers tends to support the government's argument here, but the other set of numbers supports Mr. Sersley's interpretation. So at best, the 1972 legislative history is kind of a wash. It doesn't shed any light on the question that needs to be answered here. But what's more relevant is the 1989 legislative history, because in 1989, Congress amended Section 1162 for the express and written purpose of expanding the clothing benefit. And it did so in two ways. It added paragraph 2, which refers to the skin condition problem. And in addition, Congress specifically amended paragraph 1 to eliminate the plural word appliances, leaving only the singular word appliance. Now, there's nothing in the 1989 legislative history that specifically says why Congress made that change, but a very reasonable and logical explanation, and I would submit the only reasonable and logical explanation for why Congress eliminated the plural appliances, is that it wanted to make clear that severely injured veterans like Mr. Sersley, a triple amputee, are not going to be limited to a single clothing allowance if they have multiple appliances. Instead, each one of those appliances can, in appropriate circumstances, qualify for a separate clothing allowance. Now, we submit that it's error to overlook a specific amendment that Congress made to the statute. Congress eliminated the plural word appliances, presumably for a reason, and Mr. Sersley has presented a logical and reasonable explanation for why Congress did so. The government has not provided any explanation. And therefore, we think the 1989 legislative history very strongly supports a broad interpretation of paragraph 1.
Now, Mr. Barney, you're into your rebuttal time. Would you like to save it?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, then let's hear from the Secretary. Ms. Cohen.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, the plain language of 38 U.S.C. Section 1162 provides for a single clothing allowance per veteran per year. If you look at the statutory text itself, the sort of introductory paragraph says the Secretary shall pay a clothing allowance of $662 per year to each veteran, one clothing allowance singular per year to each veteran singular.
It doesn't say one, it says a.
Right. A generally means one singular. It doesn't say shall pay clothing allowances, plural, per year.
No, we do have some patent cases that say A doesn't mean A. A could mean more than one.
Your Honor, I'm not familiar with
On that basis...
You're not a patent lawyer?
No.
What are you doing in this courtroom?
On that basis, why could we say that A does not mean one? A could mean a single occurrence, right?
A could mean
more than one. It could be more than one prosthesis. It could be an arm, a leg, and a wheelchair. So you could have more than one cumulative type of an allowance.
You could have, certainly could have more than one prosthesis, but that doesn't mean that you have more than one allowance.
There's nothing in the language that I would read that says a maximum of $677 per year.
No, but it's specifying a number of $662 per year to each veteran. In that sense, it's saying this is the allowance amount. Everyone gets $662 regardless of what your actual damage to your clothing is. Congress has chosen not to go to each veteran and say, how much per year are you spending extra because you have one prosthesis or more than one prosthesis. Congress has said each veteran gets $662 per year if they qualify, that is, if they have a service-connected disability that requires them to wear or use a prosthetic.
Would you read it differently if it said a clothing allowance of $660 per year to veterans who, because of a service-connected disability, would that change your construction?
No, that would be not quite as clear as the each veteran language, but it still, under the regulation, would be a clothing allowance per year to veterans who...
We're talking about the statute.
Yes, we're still talking about the statute.
Yeah, okay.
Who, because of a service-connected disability...
All right, let's take that phrase.
Okay.
How about if it said, because of service-connected disabilities?
That would actually more favor our interpretation. Because
yes, I think it would. I think you're right. I think if it said, because of service-connected disabilities, your case would be quite persuasive. But it doesn't. It says, as the plaintiff has pointed out, that Congress is using the singular here, just as they converted the statute from plural appliances to a singular appliance. They've used singular here because of a service-connected disability. Which, doesn't that suggest to you that a service-connected disability means exactly that, and if you have more than one service-connected disability, in appropriate cases, you might be entitled to more than one clothing allowance?
No, a service-connected disability, certainly I would agree with you that a service-connected disability means one disability in the sense that all you need is one in order to get this benefit. You don't need more than one disability to get the benefit. You only need one, so it's saying you get the clothing allowance if you have a service-connected disability that requires you to wear the prosthesis.
It seems to me your thesis sounds very much like the sort of thing an insurance company argues when it's trying to avoid liability, which strikes me as a little odd in the context in which the Veterans Administration has an obligation to try to help veterans. How do you reconcile those two ideas?
Well, there's certainly an obligation to help veterans, but Congress is the one who passed this particular statute, and what the court needs to do is look at the plain language of the statute and interpret what Congress intended to do with the clothing allowance, and it's our position that the plain language says one clothing allowance per veteran per year. Whether or not that construction is fair to veterans is not something this court gets to unless there's an ambiguity in the statute, there's an ambiguity in the regulation, and there's some ambiguity in the VA's interpretation of the regulation.
Let's approach it from this question, and not so much ambiguity. Let's, for the purpose of this question, agree that it is quite a reasonable plain reading that A means one. Is your position that it's impossible to read it any other way? Because if it's not impossible, whether or not it is the most logical plain reading, then don't we have to consider the rules and the statutes about interpreting situations in favor of veterans?
Right. If the court were to find that the plain language could be read some other way other than one clothing
allowance. Well, that wasn't my question. Are you saying that it's impossible to read it so that it would permit an additional clothing allowance in the situation where it's clearly different articles of clothing?
Right. Well, that would be the same thing. If the plain language says a certain thing, then it would be impossible under the plain language for there to be more than one clothing allowance.
So you're saying that the plain language as used here by the Veterans Court is the only conceivable reading?
That's correct. Based upon the way that
it's not quite plain language, often is subject to more than one reading. That's why we have lawsuits about plain language.
Well, if there's ambiguity, then it's not plain language, and then the court would have to look at the regulation.
So you're saying that there are no gradations, it's either up or down?
Either up or down, that there's one or more than one clothing allowance?
In terms of reading the statute, that it is absolutely prohibited, in your view, to read the statute more generously to the veteran, recognizing there are statutes that require that be done, because of the way the statute is written.
That's correct. In our view, the way the statute is written, you only get one clothing allowance per veteran.
It doesn't say only
in the language, but it's our position that...
That would be plain language, I think, if it said only.
Well, that would certainly...
Then we have a situation that, according to the statistics, apparently wasn't even presented. This is an unusually... disabled veteran?
Probably. I'm not aware of the statistics as to how many veterans have more than one.
I think there were some weren't there some figures in one of your briefs?
There were figures concerning the total number of veterans that might qualify for a clothing allowance. There were no statistics in the legislative history concerning specifically how many of that group were veterans that had more than one.
Do we have any current statistics from the VA on how many veterans might qualify if more than one clothing allowance was available, with the understanding that that clothing allowance would be for different garments, not two for the same garment?
No, Your Honor, we don't have those statistics.
We have no data.
But if it's so clear that this situation wasn't considered, then how can the language be so plain as applied to this situation?
It's not clear that the situation wasn't considered. It's not.
So there's no statistics, no numbers, no
counts?
That's
right.
Nobody knows? You want us to infer that it nevertheless was considered, or infer that it was not considered?
Neither, Your Honor. All that our position is that it was not in the legislative history either way. There's nothing indicating that specifically veterans with more than one prosthetic appliance were considered at the time of the statute. But just the language of the statute itself, and there was some more general discussion in the legislative history, which also referred to a clothing allowance and the clothing allowance singular, that those things indicate, even though the legislative history doesn't specifically address veterans with multiple appliances, that they did consistently in the legislative history use the terms the and a, referring to a singular clothing allowance.
You know, I love statutory interpretation cases because they just give you so many interesting issues. I agree with you, as a matter of fact, that the statute is really plain and is not ambiguous, but I happen to think it's quite plain the other way. For example, let me show you why that's true. The Secretary, under regulations which the Secretary shall prescribe, which certainly sounds like Congress intended the Secretary to deal with the unique problems and cases that might come up, shall pay a clothing allowance because of, skip the to each veteran part, because who else would it be paid to? So I think that's just surplusage in the statute. Shall pay a clothing allowance because of a service-connected disability. Right?
That's what it says.
That's what it says. Shall pay a clothing allowance because of a service-connected disability, which the Secretary determines tends to wear out or tear the clothing of a veteran. We have here a veteran with two service-connected disabilities, both of which tend, presumably, to wear out or tear the clothing of a veteran. Seems to me it's clear on its face that the secretary shall pay a clothing allowance because of each of those service-connected disabilities, because it says because of a service-connected disability. So I think the plain meaning of the statute, with all due respect to Mr. Barney's disagreement with me, I think the plain meaning of the statute is very clear. It says you are entitled to a clothing allowance, Mr. Veteran, for each service-connected disability you may have if, under the circumstances, it makes sense to the secretary because you are damaging two different garments. Now, the statute doesn't say that last part, but it's clear that the statute says the secretary shall prescribe regulation. You want to read the statute to preclude the secretary from dealing with these unique, and regrettably not unique, cases in which you have a veteran with more than one service-connected disability. I cannot find that in Congress's intention that they want to preclude the secretary from dealing with those cases. And I don't understand why the VA wants to find that in this statute. So it seems to me the clear meaning of the statute has to be exactly what it says. And the secretary can write regulations. The regulation he's written isn't very helpful, but the secretary can write regulations that say you only get one clothing allowance per garment, but if you've got more than one service-connected disability with affecting different garments, by golly, we want to help you. Wouldn't that make sense for the secretary to take that position?
The statute certainly allows the secretary to prescribe regulations to implement the statute, but we would, with all due respect, disagree with your reading of the plain language. The part that does say per year to each veteran is an important part, in that it is saying one per year to each singular veteran. And the section that says because of a service-connected disability does not, as Your Honor indicated, say because of each service-connected disability.
But it doesn't say because of service-connected disabilities either, does it?
No, it doesn't. It says a service-connected disability. And as I said earlier, All that's saying is that you only need one disability. You don't need multiple disabilities to get the clothing allowance. You just need one, which is why it uses the singular term one. Mr. Sersley argued that the singular, in 1989, when the statute was amended and the plural disabilities was removed, that the only possible explanation for that was his explanation that there would now be a possibility of getting more than one. But that is not the only reasonable explanation. It is also possible that the word or disabilities was just seen as surplusage because, as I said, you only need one disability in order to get the clothing allowance. But given that we disagree on a plain meaning, perhaps there is no plain meaning. And in that case, if the court were to find it ambiguous, it's our position that deference should be given to VA's regulation that it has actually implemented.
Regulation parrots the statute, doesn't it?
It doesn't exactly parrot the statute. It
pages
uses
A to the...
Right, and it also, more importantly, uses the term appliances, plural, which the statute does not use, and that indicates that VA has interpreted the statute to mean appliance or appliances, plural, would still get you one clothing allowance.
Exactly what the Congress repealed.
Yes, but VA has changed this regulation since 1989, when Congress took out the or appliances. They've changed other parts of the regulation, but VA has not changed the portion that says appliances in their regulation, which seems to indicate that they kept the same interpretation of the statute throughout, even though Congress removed or appliances, that VA continued to interpret the statute to mean one clothing allowance regardless of whether you have one appliance or more than one appliance.
So you're saying that the 1989 amendments then would support your position, it's still singular? and it was with clear intent that they removed the plural in the language. Prosthetic or orthopedic appliance or appliances, they took appliances out.
That's right.
So what does that mean as far as congressional intent is concerned, that they wanted to go back to the singular? Or did they make the statute so ambiguous that it should be interpreted properly at this point in time? Is that what creates the ambiguity?
We don't know what Congress's intent was in removing the or appliances. It's our position that it didn't create any ambiguity, that the statute, whether it says appliance or appliances or appliance singular, still has the plain meaning that you get one clothing allowance. There's no indication as to what Congress's intent was. What I'm saying is that if the court were to find that there's ambiguity in the statutory language, the regulation since 1989, even though it's been amended and VA has clearly considered it since the change in the statute, has continued to keep the plural appliances, meaning that VA has interpreted the statute continuously from 1972 onward to mean that you get one clothing allowance, whether you have one appliance or multiple appliances. That's also been consistent in VA's interpretation of the regulation in various VA documents, which are mentioned on page 23 of our brief, that talk about the clothing allowance singular, again, has been consistent.
Your review of the legislative history showed that this aspect wasn't discussed. The legislative history does show, what, an annual increase in the amount of the clothing allowance based on the cost of living? Is that why we have the increases that are shown and the irregular number now of $662? Is
right.
It in the statute that, or in the legislative history?
Almost all of the changes that have been made in the statute, which appear to be yearly changes, are just changes in the amount of the allowance. So it does increase based upon cost of living.
Okay. Does a veteran get the increase automatically as the statute increases?
That I'm not sure of, Your Honor, but I would think so since it's a yearly payment.
Any more questions, Ms. Cohen? Any more questions? Okay.
Thank you,
Ms. Cohen. Mr. Barney?
Just a couple points, Your Honor. On the issue of deference, the CAVC found that the regulation does, in fact, parrot the statute. So to the extent that the court is going to afford deference to the agency's interpretation of its own regulation, it seems there should be deference to the CAVC, which is the highest tribunal in the agency's finding that the regulation is, quote, indistinguishable from the statute. With respect to the fact that the regulation was never amended and still contains the plural word appliances, I don't believe that's the type of gap filling that is envisioned with Chevron deference. The agency essentially did nothing. It didn't fill a gap. It did nothing. It didn't amend the regulation. But in any event, whatever deference is owed here, and again, we don't think their Chevron deference is appropriate here because the regulation parrots the statute. But whatever deference is owed here, it has to be taken with the Supreme Court's guidance in Brown v. Gardner, that regulations and statutes, to the extent there's an ambiguity, should be construed in favor of the veteran. The government, in their brief on page 5, suggests, actually more than suggests, they argue that Chevron deference supplants the rule of Brown v. Gardner in the sense that if a regulation is a reasonable interpretation of the statute, then you don't need to go to Brown v. Gardner, even if it's a veteran statute. That is absolutely incorrect, and this court stated it properly. Bear with me for 1 second. In Disabled American Veterans v. Gober, which we cite in our brief, Chevron deference applies if Congress is either silent or unclear on a particular issue. However, modifying the traditional Chevron analysis is the doctrine governing the interpretation of ambiguities in a veteran's benefit statute, that interpretive doubt is to be resolved in the veteran's favor. So
I take it that neither Judge Gayarsa nor I have persuaded you that you could, with or without patent law, make a plain meaning interpretation of this statute in your favor.
You have more than persuaded me, Your Honor. I totally agree. I selected what I hoped would be our strongest argument, but I think they're both strong arguments. So unless the court has any other questions, I have
any more questions. You, I don't know if you persuaded me or not. Thank you, Mr. Barnett. Ms. Cohen, the case is taken under submission.